Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Nine o'clock spot here on 96.5 The Fan. Got warm in here. Oh, Dolly, yeah, I'm hot today. But yeah, we are here for another hour. Tomorrow is Friday, so bye week Friday, no Red Friday, no round table, no golden locks today. He is in Atlantis in the Bahamas. Do you think he brought his sunscreen?
I would hope so. Okay. I would hope so, yes.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, but if he didn't, he's going to come back and he's going to look terrible. Then we're going to have a talk. You're an adult, wear sunscreen, don't get burned.
So let's have a talk about what the next month for the Kansas City Chiefs looks like, right? So the bye week and then the 3 weeks after. We know that there is a script out against the Kansas City Chiefs, and that script is rush the four, drop the seven, right? And I don't know if that was acceptable because the offensive line was so beat up on that game against Buffalo. Of course, now you saw that James Cook may not play this week. Of course, now it happens, right? Foot ankle injury. Sure.
Well, I mean, he was bent back on that one play, and it's probably why he wasn't in the game as much as he probably should have been. But, right. Hey, if he's going to miss some games, I'm not going to lose any sleep over that. At this point in the season, we're 5-4. I'll take any help we can get from any team, right?
Right. And we know that that's out because the worst Patrick Mahomes has looked is in that Tampa Bay Super Bowl, the Philadelphia Super Bowl, and that Bills game.
Mm-hmm.
And the script is like the recipe there is there if you can execute it. Well, I would assume that's why I think this game is kind of if so facto tonight with the Raiders and the Broncos, because I talked about this at the lead of the show. If you believe in that sort of trap game theory, I do not. But if you do believe in that theory that they are out there, this is a trap game for the Denver Broncos. You are playing a lesser of an opponent in your division, the Raiders. You are up next week against the team that you hate, despise, and want to take over in the Kansas City Chiefs. And you know what Buffalo, Philadelphia, and Tampa Bay did in their Super Bowls. They rushed four. They sat seven back and said, hey, Mahomes, we're not going to give you time to throw, and we're also going to cover all of your options. So either you run the ball or you make a mistake. And we saw that in that Buffalo game, and we saw what Buffalo also did. They exposed the defense to tight end play. Dalton Kincaid was a menace to society in that game, and I hate to break this to you, but Evan Engram is the next tight end you play, a solid vet.
Mm-hmm.
After that is Ty Warren, very good. And after that is Jake Ferguson. Very good. So this bye week, I want to know who is more important to. We know what Andy Reid's record is after the bye. It's very good, very, very awesome. But he's going on the road to a Denver team that is going to probably put together that same sort of recipe, that same sort of package that Buffalo did against you. They're going to take Benito, and they're going to take the other three on the line. They're going to try to just create pressure and then leave their secondary to make sure you can't find anybody open, whether they're fast, tall, big, whatever it is. So I wonder how much this bye week helps your offensive line as opposed to how much it helps Andy Reid, as how much it helps your defensive line in 95 specifically.
Well, I hate to use the cliche, the bye comes at the right time, but by God, every year, no matter what week it is, it does feel like it's the right time. Even last year, right? It came in week six or whatever it was. Kind of felt like the right time at that point in the season. And boy, doesn't it feel like the right time now to kind of hit the pause button on everything that we've been watching? And also, I fear for the rest of the NFL that the Chiefs now have their bye because they're coming off that loss to Buffalo. The season isn't going exactly how they want it from a one-loss standpoint. And now they have a time in that week to kind of look at themselves, self-scout, and figure out what they need to do. And the one thing that we know with this organization under Andy Reid, if something beats them, it's not beating them again. We're not going to see this again. They are not habitual offenders. I don't know that we're going to see a tight end beat the Kansas City Chiefs again this year. They're going to figure that thing out. That's what this week is all about. All right, we got these tight ends, as Dusty just mentioned. Hell of a point by him. Who are we going to have out there cover these tight ends? How are we going to do that? How are we going to right this ship from that standpoint? and they'll figure that out this week. Chris Jones situation, bro, it's time. I mean, what Dane and Hughes said on Tuesday, I need more. That is the very, as you kind of called it earlier, the generic kind of version of what everybody else is saying right now about Chris Jones. And if Dane is out there saying it, you know people in the organization are saying it as well, right? And they need more out of Chris Jones. A good bye week for Chris Jones to kind of get refocused and rest and get fresh, you know, for the rest of the season. And obviously for Trey, it's a good week, you know, to get his back a little bit healthier. So coming out of the bye week, this team should be pretty damn healthy. You know, Pacheco should be back. You know, Jawan Taylor is healthy, as we told you yesterday. Josh Simmons is on track, hopefully, to be back after the bye week. So there are a lot of things that are adding up in the right direction for this organization. They just have to go out there and not beat themselves, because as much as you say Buffalo got the win, it was still a terrible performance by Patrick Mahomes. I don't think they played that good themselves in that game. They weren't beat by penalties or really turnovers or anything like that, but they didn't take advantage of opportunities. They got to take advantage of the opportunities as well, especially when you're playing against a good team.
It's also interesting to me that since Tampa Bay did that in the Super Bowl, it's been that way. And the three worst games that we've seen under Patrick Mahomes is, you know, maybe his era in Kansas City, it just happened two of them were in the Super Bowl and one of them was against Buffalo. You would think, and this is just me being a radio host, like I you would think that they would have now, at least by now, a way to maybe audible that sort of setup where if you are, which to me, in my opinion, is running the damn football.
Right.
If they're going to leave, you know, if they're going to give you a 5-man box instead of a 7 or 8-man box, you should win that battle every single time, whether it's Kareem Hunt, Isaiah Pacheco, Rashard Smith, Elijah Mitchell, CHE or CHA, CHA, I don't know how to say it, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, CEH, whatever it may be, run the effing ball. Like, I get it. Your defense only allowed 7 points in the second half of that Buffalo game. It wasn't like Buffalo was running away from it.
If you would have told me the defense is only going to give up 17 points in that or 7 points in the second half of the game, we win that game going away.
It was, what, 21-13 at halftime?
Yeah.
And the final score was
28-21. Yeah.
So, again, they scored 7 points in the second half. You could have kept running the ball, and I think that's the recipe. And it baffles me every time that Andy Reid gets all of this credit that he is this offensive genius and this great head coach, which he is. I'm not discrediting any of that. But the fact that there is this like Achilles heel that is rushing 4 and dropping 7, and for some reason it just gives Patrick Mahomes nightmares, like he's seeing Freddy Krueger in his dreams and he knows he's got to get away. And it's like, why don't we have an offense that can debunk that? Why don't we have a system that can kind of reverse what that does? Because that is the recipe. And that is what Denver is going to do to you on Sunday when you play them in Mile High, which that's not what it's called, but you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what they're going to do. You would think the way that Andy Reid has an Alex Smith playbook, whenever Henny had to go in or whatever, Wentz had to go in, like there's this dusted off playbook. We've got to figure out a way as a team to have a sort of answer to this defense. And so far, it's not there. That's why you have the 3 and outs. That's why you have this. And Kareem Hunt was averaging 4.5 yards a game.
Let me throw this one at you. And I'm just throwing this out. What if these are RPOs and Mahomes is going with the P instead of the R or the O? You know, like what if he is not doing what they want him to do? And I'm not saying I know anything. I'm just suggesting that as the next layer to move the conversation forward. What if Andy is saying we need to run the ball more and Mahomes isn't? He wants to throw the ball because we know that aggressive side of him. And he really did have a tough time those couple of years trying to figure out how to not have to throw it downfield all the time. You gave him that downfield opportunity, and it wasn't there last week, but he still feels like he could have that downfield opportunity. I think a lot of it does have to come, though, with Patrick Mahomes recognizing that. And that's why I said on Monday, and I'll continue to say it, if he continues to try to play hero ball in these situations, we are effed in that. You know, it's not about playing the hero ball and trying to do something that isn't there. You've got to change that logic, and you've got to change that thinking. Okay, fine. You're only rushing 4 in the first play of the game and dropping 7. We're audibling out of the pass, and I'm handing it off, and we're running. And we're going to run until you decide not to drop 7. And then at the line, when you decide not to do that, you're going to blitz me? Fine. Then I'll go up over the top at it. But I think there has to be some buy-in from the quarterback as much as the head coach as well on this. But we know at the end of the day, neither want to run the football, right? Neither of those guys have anything to do with the run. But sometimes things you don't want to have anything to do with, you need and you have to use. And the run is one of those things.
No doubt about it. We'll dive completely more into a random thought that we have, plus college football, the SEC, and Big Ten, the battle that is in college football. Plus, we'll get into some more fun stuff as well here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. I hate to be this guy, but there is some sad news out of the NFL as Marshawn Nyland of the Dallas Cowboys has been found dead this morning. If you watched that Monday Night Football game against the Cardinals and the Cowboys and you remember the blocked punt scored by a Cowboy player, it was Marshawn Nyland who did that. He passes away at the young age of 24. Brutal. Absolutely brutal. That's why I tell you every day, man, stay kind, stay safe, stay groovy, enjoy life, man. It's just 24 years old, just scored a touchdown on Monday Night Football to know Thursday morning his life has ended at the young age of 24, Marshawn Nyland.
It really does suck, dude, and that's why you got to enjoy every day. We were kind of talking before the show with Nathan getting married this weekend, and I saw it on X yesterday about, you know, stop worrying about the nonsense in your life, man. You've got to go out there and enjoy the life, and it's easy for us to say because we're not here for a long time, but as George Strait, who's, you know, nothing but breakfast songs, he said, we're not here for a long time, but we're here for a good time, right? And that's the way we've got to view it, but it's so easy to get caught up in the stuff that we think is important and that we think matters and then forget about the stuff that really does matter. And that's enjoying yourself, right? Enjoying life and don't be miserable. A 24-year-old NFL player who you probably thought had the world going for him. You don't know what happened or anything like that or what's going on in people's lives or any of that thing. And so just go out there and enjoy life, man. Stop stressing about the stuff that doesn't matter. This poor kid scored a touchdown, as Dusty said, Monday night. And 3 days later, he's gone. I mean, it's awful, awful, awful. I feel so bad.
Terrible. Yeah, 24 years old, Marshawn Nyland has passed away. Cowboys, looks like a linebacker, a lineman.
Defensive end, I think.
Defensive end, number 54 for the Cowboys. Again, as Bob had just said, he scored a touchdown on Monday Night Football covering a punt block against Arizona. So life is too short. Don't be angry.
Yeah.
You know, just head up. We talked about the Chiefs on previously before we went to a break, and somebody asked a question on the text line, where did the Thornton deep ball go? Well, everybody moved down a spot on the roster, and we told you this, like they say, it's so funny how they say everybody's going to eat. That's not true.
No. Everybody's going to eat, but you may get more, you may get seconds. Yeah. I may only get firsts. Yeah. I may get some scraps. You may get thirds. Yeah. Everybody's eating.
You're going to eat, but how much?
Right.
Right. And that's what I tried to tell people when Rashee Rice came back. I was like, yes, everybody's going to eat. That's, you know, cool. But like somebody's going to get, it's like the Family Guy skit of John Goodman at the Thanksgiving table. Are we going to be able to eat? Yes. Once your father is done, but there's never any left. And he's like so overweight and they're all like skin and bones. Yeah. He's like drinking the gravy. That's essentially the same thing.
Yep.
When it comes to this Chiefs team, because it's going to go through Rashee Rice. It's going to go through Xavier Worthy, Travis Kelce, and then it's either Juju or it's Hollywood Brown, and then it's Thornton. And right. By the time you got into all those names and all the game, and you handed the ball off four times in four quarters, then that ball's not there. It's not necessarily a necessity for your offense anymore like it was weeks one through six.
Yeah, you needed that in your first five games or six games of the season to go out there and win. You needed Tyquan Thornton. It's not a bad thing that the deep ball has been gone. It sounds like somebody placed a bet or maybe picked him up on their fantasy team and is kind of wondering where they are. We would have told you don't take any Chiefs wide receivers on your fantasy team because you don't know who it's going to be from week to week to week to week. And so, yeah, there's going to be guys losing opportunities out there. I would love to see them run the ball more. They had the opportunity to do so on Monday or whenever that was, Sunday, and they chose not to. So hopefully, you know, we'll kind of get back to being more of a balanced offense and figure things out, especially when they drop those seven, because you can't keep trying to throw into that coverage. It's just not working for this team. It's their kryptonite right now. And I'm quite frankly more surprised that more teams just don't do that. I really am. I'm surprised more teams just don't rush four and drop seven the entire time. And
well, you've got to have it. You've got to have it, yeah, right? You've got to have like a Joey Bosa, which they did that. That defensive line for the Bucs that year was insane.
Yep.
Philadelphia line. Obviously, and then obviously Bosa was insane against Kansas City on that Sunday afternoon game.
But it seems like more teams, and maybe you know this better than I do or Nathan, it seems to me more teams now are really good on their defensive lines. I mean, like let's take the Giants, for example, right? They're not a good football team, but by God, that defensive line, man, with Burns and Thibodeau and Carter, like they get after that, right? Dexter Lawrence as well. I mean, it feels like to me, like everybody now has a good defensive line in the NFL. Am I just, imagining that?
No, and so I think, because on one hand, I want to say they put up 21 points. We don't think they had an impressive day offensively. We don't think Mahomes was good. We don't think they ran the ball enough. We think the whole team was kind of out of sorts. The line was banged up. They still put up 21. Like, that would be okay under the thought that there's four other guys on the other side of that line that are trying to beat you. These guys are they're in the NFL as well. Mm-hmm. They're paid as well. They're trying to beat you. But the Chiefs can't do that themselves to other teams on the defensive side of the ball. So it feels like watching the Chiefs play this season in its entirety, you feel at a disadvantage immediately because the Chiefs don't have that luxury on their defensive line.
Right.
And so if they did, maybe games like this where the team's a little bit out of sorts feel a little bit more like a toss-up like they have in the last couple of years. And then in those cases, you trust 15 to win the game, make a play late. So I don't know, because it does feel like we sit here a lot and we say, yeah, they got pressure with the front four. Well, we've said that about almost the entire league now. Just the Chiefs aren't one of those teams.
And that's there's the flip side. That's what we were kind of talking about on Tuesday, is like, did the Chiefs miss the boat from a defensive standpoint and kind of forget about? Now, this year they didn't. They drafted two guys, the second and third rounds, they drafted defensive linemen. But maybe it's them trying to catch up a little bit to maybe where this league is. Because for the last decade, the Chiefs have set the trends in this league, right? Mm. And now all of a sudden you got these great defensive lines. And George Karloftis, a hell of a player. Chris Jones in his prime, hell of a player. But that's about it right now along that defensive line. And so I would think this offseason, from a draft standpoint, you're focusing on that defensive line a lot more, because this league now shows you if you got a great defensive line that can get four guys to the quarterback, boy, you're really taking away a lot of the game.
No doubt. But yeah, I don't know, man. I just feel like the recipe to beating that defense is just running the ball.
Yeah, I agree. But you're also dealing with a coach who, this was the conversation for 10 years in Philadelphia,
I know. And how did it end in Philadelphia?
Not good.
Yeah, I'm not calling for that.
No.
I'm just saying that, like, the guy that we praise that can adjust and kind of keep up with the Joneses in the NFL, the one thing that he's never adjusted to and never tried to keep up with is running the ball. And when your quarterback has PTSD of the four-man front being rushes and the seven guys dropping back, and he looks like he did, you got to figure something out. Now, whether maybe the answer to that, and somebody in the text line brought this up as well, maybe the answer to that is, like, when you think that's what they're doing, then Rashee Rice isn't going to get open anyway. Bring him in the backfield and use him like they used Deebo Samuel.
And they did that for a couple plays on Sunday.
And then they stopped.
I know. And after the first quarter, I'm like,
just don't get it.
Do you know how excited I was watching Rashee Rice in the first quarter of that game? I'm like, he's doing everything we said that he was going to do this week. He's running the ball out of the backfield. And then the second quarter started, and it was like they all of a sudden forgot that number four was out there. But, you know, Andy is like all of us. We all have that one thing that we're just not willing to give in on, right? In life, whether it's somebody quitting smoking, whether it's somebody quitting drinking, whether it's somebody, you know, starting to wear their seatbelt who never did. I don't know, I'm just looking for things out there. Mm-hmm. Andy with the running game is like, he's going to go kicking and screaming with that running game. And if that's the only thing that at the end of 15, 20 years of Andy Reid, we go, I wish we wouldn't have ran the ball a few more times. We would have had 17 Super Bowls, you know?
Just like someone that knows they need to stop smoking. Like, right. Andy knows he needs to run the ball. Like he said it walking off the field in the first half. We need to get the run game going. We need to establish something on the ground.
Then do it.
And then completely got away from it in the second half. And so that's when it frustrates me more. Not when running is less of a part of the game plan, but when the Chiefs trail, which was by one score, two scores were part of the game, but a lot of the game they were down by one score in the second half there. And it was pass, punt. Hero ball, punt.
Right.
Or 4th-and-17, where we're going to go for this. And that was random and incredible and great, but that's not the norm. There's no need to do that clock-saving sort of pull those plays out. We need chunks here. When you're down by one score, even if it's the middle of the fourth quarter, you can still use both of those.
I'm going to jump in for a second, and I apologize for this, but it reminded me of something that we go back to that playoff game in New England in 2016 when the Chiefs lost, and Andy said, I've got to score first before I can worry about scoring second. So that would kind of go into the face of what he said about 10 years ago up in New England. I'll always remember that because fans were so mad. Why aren't we in the hurry up? He goes, because if we don't score once, we can't score twice. We got to make sure we score that one time.
And I think that playoff game is a pretty extreme example of that because it was like under the 2-minute warning before they scored. I mean, they bled that clock. But that, yeah, that's sort of the mindset that I'm operating under. And when you're down by one score and you don't have to score twice, why are we so out of sorts?
And that's what I'm saying. Like, why do we revert back to, like, go back to that Alex Smith offense that kind of matriculated the ball down the field in that game? And it just feels like, you know, Andy with the run game is like my kids in school. If they don't get it right the first time, they give up and they want to walk away and drop the class, right? It's like they run the ball and they only get 3 yards. We're done here. We're dropping the run game. No, do it again. And then do it a third time. And then, you know what, at 4th and 1, do it again.
Yeah, just, I don't know.
But we're not the only ones saying that. I can promise you that. I know there are people within the organization who say, hey, let's run the ball more. And people in the NFL going, this team needs to run the ball more.
Oh, everyone across the league is saying before the half, on the 1 yard line, line up under center, run the ball.
The problem was the timeouts. They didn't have any. And if they didn't, they wanted to make sure they got at least 3 points. And if they got stuff there, they weren't going to get any points.
But I sent out a tweet. I said, I don't trust this team to get 1 yard. I would be much more mad about that usually, but the way they were operating, I was fine with the 3 points.
This year, they've been good at getting a yard though.
Right. Yeah. In short yard situations, they've been able to fall back on that.
Yeah, Kareem Hunt on Sunday had 11 rushes for 49 yards. It's 4.5 a carry.
Yeah, I don't understand why they got away from that. He was running the ball good.
Yeah, and then, of course, you know, you have your coach on the text line. The run got stopped in the second half. They had like 3 yards per carry in the second half.
You know, Kareem Hunt, how many carries did he have for the game? Did
11.
You say 11? I think he had 8 or 7 in the first half.
Well, that text is just what Bob just said about kids, you know, doing bad on one homework assignment and then wanting to drop the class. I mean, right. Establishing the run does not mean you're going to run for 5 yards every single carry.
That's exactly right.
It's also like a handicapper in golf. If your handicap is a, you know, 13, you're not going to go out there every single round and shoot 85. You're going to have
carry the ball 6 times in the first half. My bad. So he only had 5 carries in the second half.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. It's like, you know, a handicapper at golf. He's like, oh, what's your handicap? Oh, I'm a 10. Oh, so you shoot 82 every time? No. Now, the case is I might shoot 81 or 79, but I'm also going to have an 86 and 87. It's because it averages itself out. That's how that works. But either way, run the damn ball more, mm-hmm. which would be nice to see, or use the running game to your advantage, like jet sweeps with Xavier Worthy or Deebo Samuel's type of runs with Rashee Rice, or, you know, tosses to Bashard Smith. Do something to be more innovative because – the pressure is building. Speaking of pressure, you had a random thought about coaching because of what's going on at The Ohio State University.
Yeah, and obviously I love what's going on at Ohio State, but I saw a headline that said, Day building Ohio State into juggernaut, right? And he is. I mean, Ryan Day, you know, if he doesn't beat Michigan, we'll talk about firing his ass. And he's got a great beard too, Dusty. I mean, I look at that guy's beard, I'm like, man, I wish I could grow facial hair like Ryan Day. And I started to think about who's got the harder job now to build a juggernaut and sustain success. Is it Ryan Day at Ohio State or is it Andy Reid in the NFL? Where is it harder to sustain that success? I would always in the past have argued college because you're recruiting, you're dealing with parents, you're dealing with kids, you're dealing with boosters, you're dealing with all kinds of stuff. But now with the NIL in college, as long as you continue to keep those coffers full, you have that leg up over everybody else. You don't have that in the NFL, right? So I think now, where I would have said the NFL is easier to sustain success, I think it may be college right now that it may be easier to create that juggernaut and sustain that success. Even though I would never want to be a college coach, I'd rather be a pro coach than a college coach because of all that stuff I just said that you have to deal with. I think if you're at the right university, and there are going to be right universities and wrong universities with this NIL stuff. If you're at the right university, you can sustain success for a very long period of time in college football. I think it's harder in the NFL now with how many people change teams all the time. We don't give anybody time. Coaches get fired all the time. Andy Reid is very rare that he's been able to establish two legitimate, awesome programs in the NFL. Doesn't normally happen that way. So I'm kind of leaning towards college now. We're probably about 3 years ago. I was, the NFL is much easier to maintain success.
Yeah, it's tough because we've seen NFL coaches get fired after 1 year. We saw the guy in New England get fired after 1 year. The Raiders got fired in 1 year. Houston fired a guy after 1 year.
Houston fired a lot of people after 1 year, didn't they?
And I think the issue that you hit on with the college football job is that there are so many boosters with so much money that have so much power politically and, you know, school-wise, they can say, well, I'm not going to donate my, especially now that you asked, you know, you added NIL,
yeah,
right? Like in the NFL, I would assume most coaches in my opinion. I think the average, you would get 3 years. In college, you would think that's there, but if you pissed off, you know, two or three boosters because you're not playing somebody's kid or you're not taking this, they will run you out of town.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't care. Or, for instance, if you can't, because, I mean, I remember when Harbaugh couldn't beat Ohio State, and they're like, well, is he the guy? I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, what's Michigan been since Lloyd Carr's been gone, and you haven't had anybody coming in and fill the void of what they're doing, and yet here's Harbaugh winning 8-9 games a year and getting you a chance to play for something special, but yet he can't beat Ohio State, so get him out of here.
Right.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. But that's where college is. 100%. I mean, like college is weird like that. Oh, you didn't beat Ohio State or Michigan, you're fired. I went 10-1 and won the national championship, but you didn't beat Michigan, right? So you do have that hanging over your head, and there is stuff like that, and they do run guys out. Like, I don't think in college anymore you get the 4 years, though. I really don't. I used to think you get at least 4 years in college because it's a whole recruiting class. Let's see what you can do. You don't need recruiting classes anymore in college. You just need to go out there and start spending money in the transfer portal, and that's how college is going right now. So I don't even think you get 4 years in college anymore.
I think in both leagues, if you're in the upper echelon, whether it's NIL in college or if you're blessed with one of the top four or five quarterbacks in the NFL, I think if you're not in those sort of tiers, it's going to be difficult. In the NFL, like you said, players move on, but also the parity amongst teams, the salary cap, everybody in that league is so good. Every player, has, I guess, it's been whittled down more than it has at college football. There's so many teams, so many different levels. Just by virtue of being in the NFL, the talent is more equal. But yeah, in college, it is, you know, you're dealing with the NIL and the player moving, but if you are not at one of those coaches in a Big Ten school, an SEC school, or a few others, I mean, you almost don't have a chance of having significant success. I would say that it is on the top end of college football, but then it falls off a cliff if you're not one of those upper ends.
The other thing at college sports too, with today's world, is that you can lose your entire team in one season. Like, if three or four guys don't like the way the coach is doing things, they can just be like, well, we're going to transfer. And then you lose your entire – I mean, you look at Pootie Tang, Jerome Tang from K-State, had the team back and doing everything. And then all of a sudden, now they're like, this is it. Like, if he starts, you know, the season, we're piss poor. Like,
was it 2 years ago that people loved Jerome Tang?
2 years ago.
2 years ago, right?
And now all of a sudden, it's like, I don't know if we want him back. And you're like, okay. That was 2 years ago. And you look at all the talk about Bill Self. Oh, by God, they're a 3 seed. They're a 5 seed. Still has it.
The people who were saying that last year are delusional and have a screw loose and should check into a mental institution. There were people saying that Bill Self doesn't have it anymore. Come on.
I also think that it's tougher in college to coach because you are coaching still young adults. And you don't know if they've gotten to that point yet because of where they were. Like, I mean, I don't know. I can only imagine what it would have been like if Shedeur Sanders wasn't playing underneath his dad. Like, we're watching him pantomime in a locker room. We're watching him say all this stuff and all that. If his dad's not his head coach, is he the same person that he is? Maybe not, because you have these egos of these young kids that think they got it all figured out and they're getting a little bit of money that they can, spend on and stuff with NIL, which I think more power to them. They should do that, but it shouldn't affect who you are as a person. You should be able to learn from that, because that is the first step of what you're going to be in a major league sport, like whether it's football or basketball. Hey, here's $7 million, BYU kid. That's going to be like a potato chip of what you're going to get in the NBA if you can make it into the league.
If you can even make it
there.
But
here's where you can start your life, is saying, hey, here's how you budget. Here's where you put this money. Here's how you can invest.
You think they're telling these kids that? I would hope they are.
If they're not, they should be.
Yeah, yes. You're absolutely right.
And again, like, it's what do we always say when a young coach comes into the NFL? Well, you can't coach NFL players the way you coach college players. That's why it doesn't work out for you that way.
Right.
And we're watching Bill Belichick, who, by the way, there's a ton of stuff there. But he's going to North Carolina and probably trying to talk to these kids as if they're these NFL players. And they're either A, not registering, B, not respecting it, or C, they don't give a rip what you're saying because they don't understand or respect anything that you're saying previously. So it is very tough to me to be a college coach as opposed to, because of boosters, because of, alum, because of younger generations. And as the NFL, these guys have already gone through those hiccups. They've already gone through all of that. And I'm sure I was very hard to parent when I was a college kid, as opposed to now where they're like, wow, Dusty goes out to dinner with us and he actually picks up the tab, or he like comes to our house and like says you can ride with us and all this. It changes, and people change and they grow in life. And I think it's definitely a harder job to sustain, build, and keep a organization in college than it may be to do it in the pros.
It's funny, you guys both sound like I did a couple of years ago, because I was saying those exact same things. And I guess I probably should still be saying those things, because I think you guys convinced me now it may be easier in the NFL. I was thinking of the upper crust. I was thinking of the one percenters in college football. Like, it should be easy for Ryan Day. It should be easy for, you know, Texas. It should be easier for Oklahoma or Alabama or LSU. Is it easier for Kansas? It doesn't seem like it's changed much over there. How about K-State? Not hasn't changed all that much, you know, with the NIL. Has it changed much at Iowa State with the NIL? So I think you guys are making really good points, and I'm enjoying listening to it, quite honestly, because I'm like, yeah, you guys are still right. Even with the NIL, it's still a top-heavy college football situation. Like, other teams do have that opportunity, but will those other teams take advantage of that opportunity? At least in the NFL, everybody has an opportunity because everybody's on kind of that same playing field. To me, college football is more like Major League Baseball at this point in time than it is the NFL from a money standpoint.
Somebody in the text line says NFL is an even playing field, so that's hard, so it's way harder than being a top-tier coach and much easier than a bottom mid-tier program. Yeah, I mean, like,
yeah, I think I agree with that.
Say that again.
NFL is an even playing field, so it's way harder than being a top-tier coach and much easier than a bottom mid-tier program. Mm.
Yeah, yes, the NFL is even to an extent, you know, but then some people have a better coach, some people have a better ownership, you know.
Yeah, I still think if you have Mahomes, Allen, Lamar on your team, you're living in a little bit of a different class than you are.
Yeah, you're in a Mission Hills house as opposed to, you know, somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah, you look at the most tenured coaches in the NFL, it's John Harbaugh, Andy Reid.
McDermott's up there.
McDermott's up there. Yeah.
McVay's up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what do they all have in common?
Quarterback. I mean, seriously, you get a good quarterback in the NFL. And I used to say that about
Pete Carroll had Russ in his prime.
Yeah, just get a good quarterback in college and you were going to be fine, right? Now it seems like that in the NFL. Just get a good quarterback and you're going to be fine.
Even in the realm where we say it's the easiest, which is that upper echelon of college coaches. You have boosters, you have money, you have the name cachet, you go to the playoffs, you're a coach at LSU. Mm-hmm. If you aren't successful, it is a quick hot seat. So it's easier to sustain success, but also that leash is way shorter than it is in the NFL or at a lower tier college program as well.
And look, I think in college too, when you're going to be, if you want to be a successful coach, you got to immerse yourself with the people and you can't be Brian Kelly and be a douche. Being honest with you.
That's fair. And not have a fake accent.
Right.
The other thing too is that be very good in college football, get hired by a big university and then suck. Yeah. Then you'll get paid $15 million to quit. To bring some light to that conversation.
I know, I love it.
And again, from the 816, it's very true. It changed everything for Indiana University. They have mad NIL money. That's why when NIL came out, I was like, look out for Arkansas. What they do? Hired Calipari. And everyone goes, why would Calipari go there? Do you know the alums of Arkansas?
Dude, Jerry maybe the Jones, richest school the in the Waltons. World.
And everyone goes, oh, I never thought about that. Yeah. I'm like, yeah,
Walmart.
Look at Miami. They've been back in college football for the last 5 years. Why? NIL money is pouring in, but you got to be a coach that can sustain that talent because they will leave. Coming up on the other side, I want to ask a question on the text line. 913-586-7965, because we all have one that really pisses us off. But what's the worst thing sports fans yell to you? So again, what is the worst thing that sports fans yell in your opinion? We'll dive into it on the other side. 913-586-7965. You're listening to 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
All right, rolling through Thursday morning here. 96.5 The Fan, Fesco and Dusty with you. Nathan in today. Mac is in Spain. Nathan gets married over the weekend. All hell's breaking loose here, man. Got a couple hours left of being a single gentleman. Anything you still want to accomplish?
That's right. No, I think I'm good to go,
good?
Bob.
Okay.
I think I'm good.
All right, just making sure.
It's weird being in this spot a couple days away because you watch movies or like you think, you know, your friends or whatever, just like you view marriage or getting married and you think that this is some like tumultuous, like, oh, got to get it out of your system or got to have like some big night out. First of all, I can have fun with the same people after I'm married.
Right.
Second of all, I'm not doing anything tonight that I wasn't doing before that's going to hurt the relationship. So right. it's an interesting like – that just isn't a complete non-factor, and movies would let you believe.
And I will say this to you. If you have to get it out of your system, you're probably marrying the wrong person.
Yeah.
You know, like, I know my wife, if I tell my wife I'm doing this, fine, whatever, do whatever you want. Like, people who have that clamp down spouse, probably not a good relationship for you.
There's like
you got to ask your wife permission to do something.
That's kind of how so Jaden is too, because like there's the ultimate level of trust. Like I know that you're not going to do anything that you and I deem to be over the lines. I'm not going to do that either.
Right.
Beyond that, she's like, "What the hell are you going to do? Oh, okay, yeah, go do it. Have fun. Whatever." And right. I'm the same way to her. Like, "Oh, you're going out with who? To where for dinner? Okay, I'll see you later.
See you later.
Or, you know."
Immediately when the door shuts, I've been waiting to get that one out.
Yeah, man. I have no idea.
Hey, look, and if you can't fart around her, then you're definitely marrying the wrong person, right?
Yeah. Fart a lot in your sleep. Well, I have no control.
You're not in tomorrow, right? This is your only day this week.
Yeah, he's
right?
got a big rehearsal dinner tomorrow.
My only day in. Yeah. There's we get the errands and stuff tomorrow. Will start after the show today. It's full on wedding mode. Off of work altogether. So I think Kramer tomorrow.
Yeah. So we need Raiders to win.
You do need the Raiders to win. Much better. Yeah.
That's Kramer's team, baby.
Yeah.
So do you know what your song is you're dancing to?
Yes, the first dance will be to a song by the Alabama Shakes called "I Found You." It's
singing, "Come on, Brittany."
We saw them in I think August at Starlight.
Good. She's so talented.
So good.
She's so talented. Good. They remind me, and this is going to sound weird, and maybe body shaming because I think she has lost a lot of weight recently. But they remind me of like a modern day blues traveler.
Yeah,
kind of like that bluegrassy.
Really,
talented,
I'll have to listen.
Like,
what's it called?
Alabama Shakes.
Alabama Shakes. I wonder if that's my kids.
You've heard the song before. It's like you got to hold on. You haven't heard that song?
I don't know. Maybe I have.
I think you recognize a few when you listen to them. She might be my favorite
solo
vocalist
artist.
That's doing it right.
She has a very raspy electric sound.
Okay, I'll have to go through the playlist my daughter just gave me with like some kind of country stuff. My kids put together great playlists, and I know this isn't like breaking news or anything like that, but they're in the Tyler Childers right now, so I've started listening to a lot. Have you listened to his stuff? Not a fan.
I don't want to be that guy, but I was on Tyler Childers about 4 years ago.
Oh, you were that? Okay,
when
that's
he was
fine.
Featherheaded Indians, and like
which
singing all those
great
songs,
song,
and then he was reborn again, Christianity wise, and he doesn't sing those songs. He doesn't have any drug use in him or any sort of cussing. Gotcha. He's now like a different.
So
singer.
I like the old stuff, is what
you
you're telling.
You love old Tyler.
No, I do like it a lot. I'm listening to a lot of it now. As you mentioned, the Feathered Indian song is one of my favorite songs right now, and I'm like, I know I'm late to the party on this one because my friend Drew has been telling me for years about Tyler Childers, and I'm like, whatever. And then the kids are listening to it. I'm like, all right, cool. So.
Yeah, this little riff right here. I'm sure you've heard this song before, maybe.
Not ringing a bell yet.
Bless my soul.
I'd call them a little more like bluesy.
Yeah, very bluesy.
Country.
I'm in, though. I'll listen to that.
Yeah, they're great. They're a good jam band. They're a good patio session.
You'll hear about 3 minutes of them on Saturday night.
Good. All right.
There you go.
Anybody got a hot mom that's single looking for me to get in their will?
Wow. I could probably get back to you.
Okay. Yeah. Got an aunt.
That's what he's worried about.
Somebody needs to be escorted down the aisle. Hey, I got you covered here. Just put me in your will there, Betty.
Yeah, I'm going to go home tonight and say, hey, babe, my friend Bob's looking for someone to.
Yeah.
So you got to
You might have heard of him. He's the Pitches Radio host of the year. Yeah. In sports radio.
Yeah, that'll go over big. No, but seriously, if there's an aunt that's feeble and needs some help, I'm always there to. Okay. You know, do that. I like the older women. So,
This is like, why is Bob helping Grandma down the aisle?
That's right.
Ceremony?
Yeah, she gave me $500 at the door. Oh, you look like a strapping lad.
Why did Dusty and Jen leave together?
5 always told my wife, I said, if the chance happens and I can, you know, get in a will, she's like, eh, whatever.
I'm going to look like LeBron James courtside. Be like, first off, happy National Women's Day. Oh, stop it. Now, we asked you on the other side, what's the worst thing you could yell at a sporting event?
Yeah.
I'm with this one. I hate everyone at golf events to say, get in the hole.
Get in the hole.
Hate it. Hate it.
Yeah.
Somebody says, get in the hole off the tee box on a par 5. Hate it.
Yeah. I thought of this because the new thing now at youth sports and high school level sports is to yell, do you want it more? Who wants it more? Come on, you need to have it more. Are you really thinking these athletes don't want it more? Like that's the thing I hear a lot. Or the other thing that I hear a lot, which I really hate now at youth sports. Good idea when the kid like makes a pass and it's incomplete or it's not good. Maybe it wasn't a good idea. Maybe the good idea was the wide open guy over here. That was a dumb idea. But we're rewarding everybody. Every time they make a mistake, good idea, good idea. Like that's the new thing. But the one thing that drives me nuts for years has been the overrated chant. Your team's beating this team. That degrades your team. When you're doing the overrated chant.
I love the high school chant of we can't hear you.
That's another one. Yes.
when we played Rockers, we'd always chant, "We have girls."
That's right. Absolutely.
That was our go-to.
Yeah, I stood in many a student section yelling that at Rockers.
We 100%. Have girls.
100%. We took that show on the road to Rockers a few times when I was in school. I don't know if you guys went there and did that, but we felt like kings at Rockers.
Did you go to Rockers?
No. I went to Blue Springs.
Oh, okay.
Rockers was always the biggest game, either that or South, depending on how good South was that year. So I hate when someone has a bit, and there's a few of these guys on like TikTok, Instagram right now that's their account. As they go to these games, they heckle a player in the same way.
Oh, yeah.
But not like heckling. There's one that I'm thinking of that are Giants fans that they yell like something that's funny but not funny to the player and try to get him to turn around. I hate when the bits are overused. And that extends to just like heckling a player here at the K. You're in the crown seats. You yell, "Hey, so-and-so, you suck." Everyone laughs. That's cool. Let it go. But then that guy's got to do that all night long.
Right.
Now the player's giving him the attention or the fans are looking at him. I don't care what it is. Just if you got to say something, say it and then forget it. It'd be better if you didn't say anything.
Yeah, don't be the bit guy. I get that.
So looks like Josh Klingler texted into the show. The worst thing that people yell is, "Let's go," during a game. Go where? And no, I don't want to high five you. Get the hell away from me. Seems like a cling take.
Next take is going to be, don't spit on the sidewalk, because that's his big thing.
Somebody says, "Rocker students would just yell back at us, 'We got your girls.'"
That is true.
Yeah, because when I was at South, it was a lot of the Belfani kids went there. They definitely took a lot of our girls. Tony Temple, he definitely probably took a few girls from our school.
They took our quarterback and I think eventually our head coach from Blue Springs. So.
The guy that yells bunt at a baseball game?
God.
Bunt it!
Yeah.
Well, you can't do that anymore because you don't shift dramatically.
Or the guy that acts like he's on the sideline at a football game. Pass! During play action.
You know who actually my number one hated thing is at sporting events, TV, at home, or at the game, is when they yell to the athlete by their first name as if they are best friends.
Go Trav.
Come on, Patrick!
You know what another one is? When every single male, when they see the ball on the ground screaming ball, every man.
That's a good one.
It is a Pavlovian dog response. Anytime there's a fumble in the NFL, the entire place screams ball.
I might be guilty of that one, though.
No, we're all guilty of it. We all played like high school football, and we were all taught as soon as the ball came out to yell ball. And so here we are in our 40s and 30s and 50s. We're all still yelling ball when the fumble pops out.
All right. We'll see you Saturday. Good luck with everything tomorrow.
Yes.
Good luck with everything Saturday. And thanks for the Minsky's Pizza. Can't wait.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, go do something nice for somebody today. You never know. It could change their day, their week, their month, their year. It is simply cool to care. Kansas City, stay kind, stay safe, stay humble, stay groovy. Coming up next, it's Cody Serta and Drew Nixon from 10 to 2. That's right. Steven Serta's in the house. One of my good buddies. We'll talk to you tomorrow on a Friday.
Good morning, Kansas City. This is Leo Chanel, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Chiefs football 96.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.